Right.
Now we're holding on page Lamed Gimel in Sanhedrin, the paragraph Piska Matzulos Chos, so middle of Osayin Dalad, the first line of the wide lines. After the Mishnah in the Perek talks about how they cross-examine the Edim, then it finishes off by talking about what happens Matzulos Chos, if they found reasons to exonerate him, then he goes free, and if not, then they have to sit together. We learned earlier in the Masechta that they can't give the verdict of Dini Nefoshes that day. They have to wait until the following day. So that night, the Mishnah describes how they get together in pairs, or sometimes each dayan by himself, and they think it over, and the next morning they come and give their verdict. And the Mishnah says, they wouldn't drink wine any of that entire day when they're judging a case of Dini Nefoshes. So the Gemara says, Yayin my time aloy. Well, why shouldn't they drink wine? Now, you do have a concept that Bechlal, if you've drunk wine, Shoser Revius Yayin al Yoda, that if he drank a Revius of wine, a person shouldn't paskin halacha in general, but there you have, for example, that you could wait a little while and the effect of the wine will dissipate. But here, apparently, the idea is they can't drink wine all day that when they're judging Dini Nefoshes, or even, for example, less than a Revius or whatever. So why not? Because the Pasuk says, Ula roiznim e sheikhar. The Pasuk says, for roiznim, no strong drink. Sheikhar means alcoholic drinks. The simple meaning of roiznim means something like rulers or leaders or whatever. But we douse in the word roiznim, ha'oiskin beroze shel olam, those who are involved with the secret of the world, al yishtakru, should not get drunk. So Dini Nefoshes is called the secret of the world for a number of different reasons. Marsha points out, because after all, we learned before, we said that every person is an Olam Malay, so a person himself, every individual is an Olam Katan, is a microcosm of the whole world, and therefore he can be called the secret of the world. Habona adds a point also that there is, after all, there is a lot of secrets and a lot of deep investigation whether the guy really is Chayiv Misa, as we learned before, Kalam Abed, Nefesh Achas Mi'Yisrael. So in that sense, it can be called Roze Shel Olam. Ben Yoyod adds also, you know, it's the Neshama is hidden in the body, so it's a secret. It's not visible to us. And sometimes, even you have, there can be cases. We'll learn about an example in the next parak, in a day or two, Bez Hashem, the whole story with Shimon ben Shatach's son, where he was framed. And where he was framed and executed, even though he hadn't done anything wrong. So that's also Roze Shel Olam. It's the secret of why does Hashem allow such things to happen. So therefore, so all of that is included in Roze Shel Olam. Nigman Adin Perek Shishi. So now, the sick now having gone through the details, how Beis Din is set up and how they cross-examine the Edim, so now we get to the point this Perek talks about when the verdict has been decided and the guy is actually going to be taken out to be executed, so it describes the whole procedure of how they do it. It begins Nigman Adin, once the din has been completed, then they take him out to Skila or whichever Misa it is. So the Gemara says, Omer of Chia Barav Ashi, Omer of Chista. Hayotze lahorig, a person is being taken out to be executed, Mashkin oise kodet shalavoyna bakois shoyayin. They would give him to drink a grain of lavoyna, of frankincense, mixed in a cup of wine. Kadeshi titoref daito, so that his mind will be confused. I guess the pashas, the wine, I guess the frankincense makes the wine more potent and makes it like it's more likely to numb him and drug him, sort of. So that way he won't feel the pain. So this way, Rashi says he's not going to be as worried and as tense over the fact that he's about to be killed. This way, in other words, he'll be able to be a little more relaxed. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Tnu Sheikha La'Ovid. This is actually in the same chapter of Mishlei as you have that pasuk called the Roizanim E Sheikha. It's actually the next pasuk. Tnu Sheikha La'Ovid, give strong drink to the one who's going lost, V'yayin L'morei Nefesh, and give wine to those who are bitter in spirit. So this guy is embittered in the fact that he's being executed, and he's Ovid, he's about to be lost from the world, so then you should give him some strong drink in order to numb him. V'tanya, now we learn in a b'raisa, Noshim Yekodesh Shubi Yerushalayim, the important women, the choshuva women in Yerushalayim, Hoy Misnadvas and Mavias Oysam. They would volunteer, and they would bring the wine and the lavoina for this purpose. They made it their special mitzvah to have rachmanis on this. The Gemara points out later on in the Perek that, you know, when we talk about V'ahavta L'Recha Kamoicha, one of the applications of it is when somebody is being executed by Beis Din. Bror lo misa yofa, the Gemara says, choose for him the easiest possible death, and that has various implications as far as the dinim of misas Beis Din. So here these Noshim Yekoris took that Avas Yisrael, that v'ahavta l'recha kamecha tahor, and they would volunteer to provide that wine and frankincense to numb the poor guy. So the Gemara says, Lo hisnadru noshim yukaris. What happens if the noshim yukaris don't step up and don't donate it? Michel me, then from whose funds does that wine and frankincense come? And the answer is, Havade mistabra mishal tzibur. Well, then it's logical that we get it from funds of the tzibur. Kiven dechtiv tnu, because the pasuk says you, plural, should give, implying mididhu, it has to come from theirs. So if the noshim yukaris are volunteering it, wonderful, but if not, then it's a responsibility on the tzibur, tnu, you should give. Interestingly, Reb Shura Goin, Reb Shura Goin's famous Igeres, where he goes through a lot of Jewish history up to his time, in particular the history of the time of the Tanoim and Amoroim, he talks about after the period of the Amoroim, there was a period of Chachamim called the Rabbanan Sivuroi. You look in the back of the Sidurim, you have that chart that chart showing the development of Torah from Chamisha Chumash Torah all the way down to the Shulchan Aruch and Noisa Kalim. So you have the Rabbanan Sivuroi in the middle over there. How long that period was? Different historians argue anywhere between about 89 and 200 years. Whatever the case, one of the last Chachamim of the Rabbanan Sivuroi was named Rabbi Ravai Meiroiv. Rabbi Ravai was his name, and Roiv was the name of the town he came from, I guess. So Rabbi Shura has a Gersa over here, and Rabbi Hanan also brings it in the Gemara, but this answer over here, Mistabra Mashal Tzibur, is from this Rabbi Rai Meroiv. Meaning, because even though, so the Ravina and Rav Ashi completed Shas, basically, as we have it, but the Rabbanan Sivuroi, the next couple of generations after that, were still authorized to make short editorial additions to it. So here you have, up until Rabbi Ravai's time, this question was left open, Michel Mi, obviously in his time, it's not in the Gala Maisa, the Sanhedrin was gone for hundreds of years already, but still, Torah Hivalim and Danitzarech, and this Rabbi Ravai, one of the last Rabbanan Sivuroi, came up with the answer, and therefore it was recorded in the Gemara. Further on, the Mishnah talks about how when the person is being taken out to be executed, they make a public announcement that the ploini is going to be executed for this and this aveda, these and these are the edim, so that in case people can come to be mazin the edim or to bring evidence in his defense or whatever. So the Gemara talks about in that connection the story with Oyser Ish being executed. The Gemara calls him Yeshua Notzri. It's censored in most Gemaras, but you can find it in many newer prints of Gemara. Whether that Yeshua Notzri is the same one as the Christians believe in, a huge amount of ink has been spilled about that. The Rishonim argue among themselves which it is. The Ramban, for example, holds it's the same one, and he says that they dated him later than he really was. We're gonna have later in the Masechta. We have stories that place him in the time of Yeshua ben Prachya, that he was a Talmud of his, and that's about 100 years before the guy that the Christians hold of. So then in that case, the Ramban says he really did live then, and the Christians claimed that he was later. On the other hand, the Meiri says there were two different people, and there's a lot of back and forth about the different possibilities.
In the time of the destruction of the second Mishnah.
No, so even according to them, he died, he was executed, whatever, so about 40 years before the Churban. But some Rishonim make the point that the Christians deliberately placed him then, rather than in the time of Yeshua ben Prachya, which is correct, in order to be able to claim that the Churban happened because we didn't accept him because we didn't accept him and him and his claims. But on the other hand, there are arguments among Rishonim that they really are two different people. In any case, the Gemara talks about the execution of him, and then it goes and talks about also five of his Talmidim that were brought to be executed by Beis Din as well, and you have a whole odd thing where each of them tries to argue on the basis of his name that they should exonerate him. Each one says that my name is similar to a word in a pasuk that has a positive connotation, and that should show, you know, the Christians are always big on this kind of thing of bringing psukim and twisting them for their purposes. And the Gemara explains, since both Yeshu himself and his Talmidim, the Gemara says, were kroiv in the Malchus, they had contacts with the government, they had close contact with the government, so the Chum couldn't just say, never mind that, that's silly, we're executing you anyway because of the Avedis you did. They had to find some way of answering these guys, as ridiculous as their claims are, you have to find some way of answering them. So the last one, the reason I'm mentioning this is because it gets into the last one, brought a postit, which now, once the Gemara deals with that story, then the Gemara brings another drosha on that same postit, which is here in Yaakov. Interestingly, you know, it's the story itself with these Talmidim and with Yeshua himself is not here in Ein Yaakov, and you could obviously think the censors removed it. I actually took a look even in the original edition of it, which was not printed where there was censorship, and they don't have it either. So I don't know if when Rabbi Yaakov ben Chavi put together Ein Yaakov, maybe Yitaka didn't have an edition that had it, or I don't know. Anyway, so the last one of them, the Gemara says, was a fellow named Toida. So he says, you know, the apostle says, Mizmer l'soida. Doesn't that mean that Toida is good, something good? So they answer him, But you know, it also says, Zeveach Toida yechabdonami. The one who sacrifices a Toida, Hashem says, will honor me. So therefore, if we sacrifice and kill you, Toida, yechabdonami, then we're honoring the Eveshter with that. So now the Gemara brings another Durasha on the same pasuk. Amr of Yeshua ben Levi, kol ha-zeveach ha-siyitzroi, a person who sacrifices and shechts his yetzahara, umisvada olav, and he says vidui for his averus. So Rashi explains that the yetzahara is already convincing him to do averus, and he goes and shechts it and kills it and does tshuva and says vidui. Mala olav ha-kosev, so the posuk considers it kili kibdei la-kodesh baruch hu b'shnei olamim, as though he honored Hashem in both worlds, ba-olam ha-zeh va-olam ha-bah. Dichtiv, because the posuk says, zeveach toda yichabdonini. Now you have, usually it would say yichabdeni with one nun, but here it's yichabdonini with two nuns, and therefore that gives us this drasha that's a double covered to Hashem in this world and in the next world. So what does it mean? Zeveach es yitzroim es vada olav. If he shechted his yetzahara, then what does he have to be misvada on? So Maharsha says, poshut. What it means is, in other words, that now he sacrifices and then can conquers his yetzahara, but he still has to be misvada for what he did in the past. So he does both. The Chidah has a different Mepharshim have different explanations of what exactly why after Zeveach es yitzroim would there be misvada. First of all, Ion Yaakov points out over here an advantage of it is because the Zeveach es Yitzroi is good, is Toiv L'Shamayim. Now he's back in, now he's in good shape with Hashem. He won't do Averus. He won't do that. He won't do at least that particular kind of Averus. There's, of course, many other different aspects of the Yetzirah that he has yet to work on, but at least at this one, now he's made himself immune to that Averus. That's Toiv L'Shamayim. And when he says Vidui, then it's also Toiv L'Abrius, because now other people learn from him to also conquer the Yetzirah and not do these Averus. So therefore, he honored Hashem, and he did Torah v'Shamayim and Torah v'Abrius, therefore he gets a reward in both, therefore it says if he honored Hashem in both worlds. The Chidah has many, many different explanations over here of Zeveach es Yitzroi Misvada. It's like nine different explanations. One of them is, he says, interestingly, is that if the person does vidui first, that may not be the best way around it. Because he does vidui, but what's to say that vidui will be sincere? The Yetzirah is still very much in full power in him. Better let him be Zeveach es Yitzroi. First conquer the Yetzirah. Make himself that he won't do that Aveira anymore. Then, after that, there'll be time for vidui. Once he's made him one, otherwise the vidui is more likely to be we talked about on Shabbos, echad v'pev, echad v'lev, but in the negative sense, where he's going to say a vidui, but he's not really going to think it and internalize it. In fact, they talk about the chlal, that when a person has done an aveira, sometimes it may be just best to try to ignore it, not to wait, not to start doing tshuva on it right now, because that keeps it in the forefront of your mind, and then he's more likely to think to himself, you know what, maybe it wasn't so bad after all, you know what, I kind of did enjoy it. So better find a way to completely divest oneself of it, and then later on there'll be time for tshuva once the person has made himself that now he doesn't have that taiva anymore. So that's Zeveach es Yitzroi, and only then misvada. The Gemara continues. Marsha, by the way, points out an interesting side point over here. We're talking about shechting the Yetzirah. He says, you know, we talk about the day after Shavuos is called Yom Tevoyach. So the official reason for it is because the Alter Rebbe explains in Shulchan Aruch, you have to bring korbanos on Shavuos, just like on all the Shalosh Regalim. You have to bring Olas Re'iyah and Shalmei Chagiga. Now, Beshen, Machlokas, Beshamei, Beshil, and Masechta Beitza, whether you can bring the Olas Re'iyah on Yom Tov. The halacha is like Basilo, that you could. Nevertheless, the Alter Rebbe points out that many people would follow Beis Shammai and wait till after Yom Tov to bring it. So therefore, the day after Shavuos became known as Yom Tevoyach, the day of the shechting of the korbanos that they didn't bring on Yom Tov itself. Because yeah, you make a shlumin after Shavuos. So now the Gemara also talks about in Shabbos that there's a spirit that comes out on Erev, that floats around in the world on Erev Shavuos called called Tevoyach, where if the Jewish people had not accepted the Torah, then he would have been Tevoyach, he would have killed the Jewish people, Rahman al-Islam. So now Maharsha says, well then, in that case, why is the name Tevoyach? It should be Tevoyach, which is the active form, the one who slaughters. And the answer is because the Jewish people did accept the Torah. Therefore, they slaughtered him. So he's not Tevoyach, he's Tevoyach. He's the one who was slaughtered, like we're saying over here, Zeveyach HaSitzer. So the Gemara continues. Come see how precious, how great are people who are humble of spirit before Hashem. People who are nothing. Now consider, when the Beis Mikdash was standing, if a person brought a korban oila, fine, he did a mitzvah. So he has the schar of having brought an oila in his hand, but nothing else. He doesn't get schar for the other korbanos because he didn't bring the other korbanos. Mincha, if he brings a mincha, schar mincha b'yodei. Then he has the schar of having brought a mincha in his hand, and that's it. That's the only schar he has. Avo misha daite shvola. But if a person has a humble spirit, mala all about pasuk, then Hashem comes, the Torah considers it, the pasuk considers it, ki the hikriv kolak korbanos kolam, as though he brought all the korbanos. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, zivchei elekim, the korbanos in plural, zivchei is a plural form of Hashem, ruach nishvara, our broken spirit. So therefore, so we see that he has a broken spirit, and therefore that's considered as though he brought all the korbanos. And the loy oid, not only that, Elishain tefillah sin nim eses. Not only that, his tefillah won't be rejected. Now, why we would talk about, well, why we would think his tefillah should be rejected, we'll talk about in a second. But in any case, we see also, Shenema, that same pasuk continues. Lev nishba v'nidka, elekim loy sivze, a broken and crushed heart, Hashem, you will not scorn. You will not treat it lightly and say his tefillahs are not important. So why would we think that his tefillahs would be rejected? So first of all, Maharsha points out that if he did an Aveira, that he's chayv a chatas or an asham, so by bringing an oila, he's not going to be yotze that at all. He still needs to bring his chatas or his asham. When he has ruach nishvara, he does full tshuva, then he has zivcha elikin, then really that, it counts also for the chatas and asham that he should have brought. It doesn't mean necessarily that lost his lover, he may not still need to bring the chatas anyhow. You have this, for example, the story of Rabbi Shmuel tilting the lamp on Shabbos and writing down for himself that when the Beis Mikdash is built, I'll have to bring Chatzas Shmeina, you can be sure he had Lev Nishba Benidka of having broken Shabbos, and it still doesn't change the fact that he has to bring a Chatzas, but we're saying, at least for now, he has this course of having brought all the Korbanos. One idea, in other words, is, the Gemara talks about, so we have a Korban called an Oshem Tolui. We know that if a person has done something that makes him Chayiv Koris, then he has to bring a Chatzas, if he did it B'Shergit. But if he does it, what if he's not sure? The classic example that he has two pieces in front of him, one's chaylev, one's not, and he eats one of them and he doesn't know which one, then he brings an oshem toluri. What's the point of the oshem toluri? So the Gemara explains, Rashi brings it on the psukim, it protects him from yisurim until, if he ever finds out that he did the aveda, then he'll bring a chatas. So in other words, the idea is as soon as a person did something that's chayiv koris, he may be subject to yisurim. Because the Gemara tells us in Yoma that for such things, a person needs Shuva and Yom Kippur and Yisurim in order to be Mechaper for him. So now what we're saying is, by the way, now when there's no Chatas, but a person has Lev Nishva V'Nidga, then that takes the place of the Chatas. In other words, the idea would be that it protects him from Yisurim. Fine, when the Beis Mikdash is going to be built, he still has to bring his Chatas, but meanwhile he's protected from that. So now, why would we think Ein Tefillos in him Eses? Maharsha brings from a Medrash. A broken keli, a normal person wouldn't want a broken keli. You have a broken keli, you throw it in the trash. But Hashem is just the opposite. Lev nishba v'nidka, broken and crushed heart, is dafka what Hashem wants. And that's so in an emesis, his tefillah won't be rejected. On the contrary, Hashem loves a tefillah that comes from a broken heart like that. There's a famous sefer of Jerusalem called Bina Le'itim from one of the early Achronim, Rabbi Azariah Figo. He has a couple of interesting points over here. First of all, he says that when we say over here schar oil biyode, schar mincha biyode, means that a schar is going to be biyode, meaning an oil mazeh. He brought a korban, so he gets a schar for it in oil mazeh. As opposed to here, we're saying kilu hikriv kol kabonas kolam means he has beyond this biyode, he has a schar not just biyode in this world, but also in oil mazeh. For breaking his heart and doing sincere tshuva. And then when we say ein tefillos in emesis, the vote would be, usually we know a person davens the yechidus, not necessarily are his tefillos going to be so easily accepted. It depends, you know, the malachim are going to look, is he really zoicher or not? When a person davens with a minion, then we say, Hein kel kaber levaloy imas, Hashem never rejects the tefillah of the guardian. So here, the Bina Le'itzim says, the point is, this person who has this leiv nishma v'nidka, Hashem will never reject his tefillah, even when he's davening the yechidus, which is a very powerful thing. The Alter Rebbe brings an Igeres HaTshuva from the Zohar that whenever we talk about in Parshas Vayikra and in other places in Chumash, whenever we talk about Korbanos, we always use Shem Havaya. The Medrash says that there's a specific reason for it. You shouldn't think, Chas V'Shalom, that there are Korbanos being brought to different getchkes, to different gods or things like that, so therefore it always uses the name Havaya in that connection. But the Zohar points out, here we have a unique thing where it mentions Zivchei Elikim. So the vort is, the Zohar brings, and Alter Rebbe brings it in the Geras HaTshuva, is because here we're not talking about an actual korban. Here we're talking about tshuva, and having a broken and crushed heart and a contrite spirit. That is the korban to Shem Elikim. The korbanos of animals and menachos and whatnot are brought having in mind Shem Havaya. But tshuva goes to Shem Elikim. And that's why it says Zivchei Elikim.
When you do
tshuva,
you're correcting the Shem Havaya.
You're correcting the Shem Havaya as well. The Alter Rebbe talks about it in some detail over there. But you also have that this is a korban that is, so to speak, addressed to Shem Elikim. Yeah. Mishnah says, when the guy who's going to be executed, now here we're talking about Skila, the other Mrs. Bastin are in the next pair, so here we're focusing on the procedure of Skila. So when the guy is about 10 amas distant from the base of Skila, they would tell him to say vidui. Now again, this is not only by Skila, they would tell him to say vidui by any Mrs. Bastin. Here we're describing the procedure of how it was by Skila, and we understand they would do similar things by other Mrs. Bastin. So they would tell him to say vidui. Why 10 amas away, the Yad Ramah and the Bartanura on the Mishnah point out, because if he's any closer, then he's likely to be so terrified of the fact that he's about to be killed that he won't be able to think straight and he won't be able to say vidui. The Pashtus, I guess they would have him do the vidui before they give him the wine with the Lavoina that we said before, because if the whole point of that is to numb him, then he won't be able to say a proper vidui after that either. So he's about 10 amas away. They tell him, say vidui. This is the proper way. Anybody who's about to be put to death should say vidui. Marsha points out that on the face of it, the word mumosin means people who are about to be executed by Bastin. So what it means is when it said when so it does mean that, but on the other hand, to a certain extent, Marsha points out that the Gemara does elsewhere mention in Shabbos that in fact any person before they die is supposed to say vidui, and in fact Ion Yaakov spells that out. Even a person is about to die, bidei shemayim, he's supposed to say vidui. So that's what you have in Sforim like Mavro Yaboik and other Sforim like that, you have a vidui that a person is supposed to say when he's about to die, and then you have, if the person doesn't know a whole long nusach of his actual Averis, then you have something that the Mishnah says further along over here, what the person should say, and then you have a similar thing that a person would say in his vidui on his deathbed. So the Mishnah continues, Shekolam Isvada, Yesh Lechelek, Lam Abba. Anybody who says vidui has a place in Olam Haba. In other words, we're talking about a person who does some kind of serious Avera. There were only a few Averas that get Mrs. Bastin, and here he did one of them. It's pretty serious things. But nevertheless, when he says vidui, then that wins him a place in Olam Haba. And the point is, in other words, we shouldn't think that the Mrs. Bastin by itself is not going to be enough. There does need to be the vidui as well. We find this with Ochon. So you have the story in Sefer Yeshua. They had conquered Yericho. Yeshua declared a cherem on all the property of Yericho. All the gold and silver and metal kalim have to be brought to the treasury of the Mishkan. Everything else has to be burnt and is osur b'hana. Why Yeshua did that? There's a few different reasons. One reason is because Yericho was conquered on Shabbos and he didn't want them to be benefiting from what they captured on Shabbos. Another idea is he was treating Yericho like an Irani Dachas, where everything in it is burnt. Another idea is it was like Truma, because after all, it's the first city in Eretz Yisrael they conquered, so he's treating it like Truma, which is off limits to regular people. Whatever the case, he made this Cherem. The Gemara is going to mention later on, Hashem said, you know what, you would have been better not to, because now you cause a Michshel. In any case, there was one Yid named Ochon who took from the spoils, And the upshot was the next time the Jewish people went to battle against the next city, then they were routed, they lost the battle, and the pasuk says kishloshim b'shisha ish, like 36 people were killed. We'll learn in the Gemara later on what that means exactly. Doesn't mean actually 36, or does it mean something else? Whatever. Yeshua and all the skenim are overcome their tremendous. What's going to happen if now it means, in other words, look, you know, like this, the whole point was, yes, we're having to conquer Eretz Yisrael, Bechari or Bekashti, but after all, it's not really our weapons that are winning the battles, it's the Eibishter on our side. The Derech HaTeva, like Rashi mentions in Parshas Ekev, Atem Giborim Behem Giborim Mikem, you a mighty nation, but the Knanim are mightier than you. So Yeshua and the Skenim realize, look, if it's B'derech HaTeva, we're going to lose the battles over here. The only way we're winning is with the Eibishter on our side, and if we lost this battle, it shows that he's not on our side. What's going on over here? So they go into mourning, and Yeshua is davening to Hashem, what's going on over here, and how could you allow this to happen, and it's going to create a Chil Hashem, and so forth. And Hashem tells him, Hashem, we're going to, as we go through the Gemara the next day or two, that's Hashem, we're going to analyze the whole story in great detail. But anyway, Hashem tells him, to make a long story short, Hashem tells him somebody violated the Chayrim, and until you punish that guy, then the Shechinah is not going to be with you, and you're going to not win any battles anymore. So they have to, they gather everybody together. They make a girdle, and after several rounds of girdles, it lands on Ochan. As we're going to see in the Gemara, Ochan was at first claiming that, you know, a girdle, a big deal, you know, and a girdle is bound to land on somebody, but Yeshua convinces him it's not so. It is Min HaShemayim, and now let's pick up in the Mishnah. So Yeshua said to him, Bni, my son, once he was picked by the girdle, he says, Simno chovod l'Hashem elokei Yisrael, please give honor now to Hashem, the God of Israel, v'sen lo yisoy deva gomer, and give him an acknowledgement, confess, give him a toidem loshen vidri, and tell us what you did wrong. Vayan Ochan es Yeshua vayomas, so Ochan answered Yeshua, and he said, Omna, indeed, onoichi chotosi, I have sinned, v'chozois v'gemer, and I did like this and like this. As the Gemara is going to say, it means that he was over not just on the Schirim, he had been over on previous Charomim as well. And he goes and lists all the things that he took, and sure enough, they found all those things buried in his tent, and they took him and executed him. How do we know that his vidui was mechapa for him? So Shenemar, because the pasuk says right before they executed him, Vayomer Yeshua says to him, Me achartonu, why have you troubled us? Ya'korcha Hashem b'yom hazeh, Hashem will trouble you on this day. Ya'korcha Ya'korcha is melashon ocher, like stirring up dregs, like muddying things, like making things confused and muddied and whatever. But we learn from that, Yeshua, why b'yom hazeh? B'yom hazeh ata ocher, you are troubled and muddied up and disturbed on this day, v'yata ocher lo'olam haba, but you're not troubled and disturbed in olam haba. You will have your place in olam haba. Why? Because you said you're vidui. Now, how do we know? Marsha said Marsha, and a lot of other Mephoshim ask still, how do we know? Maybe it was the Mrs. Bastian alone that was Mechapra for him. Later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about people, for example, people who are killed by Goyim, Nachman al-Tlan, where it's an automatic kapara for them, whether they did Tshuva or not. So why don't we say the same thing over here? Fine, but precisely because the Pasuk says, Hayoyim Hazeh, and not in Olam Haba, then that implies at that point he hadn't been. At that point, the fact that he's going to be executed hadn't even been mentioned yet. As the Gemara is going to say soon, Yeshua kind of tricked him into confessing and didn't inform him that he's actually going to be executed. So now, when he tells him, Ya'kor Hashem b'yom hazeh, implying but not loyal abba, it can only be because now you said vidui. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well. Later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about once a person has been executed by Beis Din, they don't go and bury him in his family plot right away. They first take the body and bury it in special plots that are reserved for Haruge Beis Din. Afterwards, after the flesh has decayed and all you have left is bones, then at that point the person's kapara is complete, and then they can take him and rebury him with his family. So now, though, when Yeshua is saying "Vayoyim Hazeh," means even before there's going to be this ikul basu, even before the flesh is decayed, it takes time. It's not going to happen in one day. Already, you won't be troubled in Olam Haba because of your vidui. So therefore, we see it wasn't just the Mrs. Baskin. It's the vidui also. It's the vidui that gets in his place in Olam Haba. Okay. So therefore, we tell the person that you should say vidui before you're going to be executed. The in any daily svadus. What if he doesn't know how to save Yidui, meaning he doesn't know how to live? So Maharal Shah says, now one possibility you could conceivably understand is that it would mean if he knows he didn't do this actual Aveira. But we're going to talk about that next in the Mishnah. So no, rather any Adel Islamist means partially. He doesn't know how to say a proper Vidui and spell out what exactly he did. So if that's so, Oymrim Loi, then the Beis Din tells him, Shluchei Beis Din tell him, Emor, then just say, Tehemi Sosi Kapara Al Kol Avanoisai. My death should be a kapara for all my sins. And this you have also in Sforim like Mabo Yavok and other Sforim like that that deal with before a person passes away, that you have something similar. If a person can say a proper vidui, then he says, and if not, then they tell him to say a Loshon like that. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. Im hu hoyedesh hu mezumam. What if the person knows that he was accused by Edom Zomim? So they say that he broke Shabbos and therefore is chayav misa. He knows for a fact he didn't break Shabbos. Why is he being executed? Because the Edom came and claimed that he did, and nobody came to be mazin him. Oimer. So then Rabbi Yehuda says what he should say is tehini sasi kapara al kol avanoisei chutz me avon zeh. May my death be a kapara for all my averus except for this one. In other words, let him make it clear that this one he's taken not guilty of, and therefore he doesn't have anything to say vidui on that, and he doesn't need kapara for that. But Omru Loi, the Chacham said, Im Kain, if people are allowed to do that, Yehu Kol Adam Oimim Kain Kedei Lanakas Atzman, then everybody's going to start saying it in order to make themselves appear innocent, and then it's going to be Motzi Laz on the Edim and on the Dayonim. Everybody's going to think every time that there must have been something wrong over here, and they framed him. So, and the halacha is like the chachamim. So, in fact, even if the guy knows that he was framed, he still has to say, "Tei misasi kapara al kol avanoisei." He didn't do this avera. Nevertheless, don't be motzi laz on the beis din and on the edim. If the edim are false edim, they'll get theirs when the time comes, as we'll learn later on in the story of Shimon ben Shattach and his son. So let's talk about more about this detail, more details about the story with Yehoshua and Achan. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, when Yeshua tells him no, he says, Bni sim no chavoid, and the word no means please. So, ain no el loshen bakosha. The word no is Yeshua pleading with him. Now, why does he need to plead with him? Yeshua is the leader of the Jewish people. Bni sim chavoid, what's a no? So the background is like this. B'shosh omel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yeshua chote Yisrael. Hashem says to Yeshua, again, Yeshua is davening and tearing his clothes and everything. What's going on? How are we going to continue conquering Eretz Yisrael? Hashem tells him, the reason why you lost is because chote Yisrael, the Jewish people have sinned. Omel HaFonav, so Yeshua says, Ribbono Shel Olam, mi chote? Who specifically? Amalei Akharish Baruch Hu, Hashem tells him, "B'chid dilater ani." Am I a baal lashon hara? Dilater is a word that comes from Latin, I think, that means like an informer, a moiser. So am I a moiser? Am I a baal lashon hara? Like hapo gadolus, go make a girdle. A girdle is arranged min hashemayim, the result of a girdle. Min hashemayim, it's even brought in Rishonim that a person who denies a girdle is like he's denying fundamental concepts of Yiddishkeit. But that way, so make girdles and you'll find out the details that way. Meaning, Maharsha explains, you look at the flow of the psukim. The psukim don't say this actual conversation, but you can see it from the flow of the psukim. Hashem tells Yeshua, "Chote Yisrael, they've sinned and they've taken from the spoils and so forth." And he continues, "Kum kadesh ha'am, go prepare the people and tell them, be prepared for tomorrow. We're going to make a girdle." So therefore, we obviously see that there was a back and forth between Hashem and Yeshua, where Hashem tells Yeshua, "I'm not going to tell you outright who it was, but I'm telling you, go prepare the people and tell them there's going to be a girdle, and that's how you're going to find it." So halach the hippo girdolus. So sure enough, Yeshua went and did girdolus. It was actually a multi-stage process. First they figured out which shavit it was. The Chazal tell us that the stone of that shevet on the choshen dimmed. This ochon was from shevet Yehuda, and therefore the stone of Yehuda dimmed. So now we know it's somebody from shevet Yehuda. Then they did a girdle among the major families, the major clans of shevet Yehuda, and it came on one of them, and then they drilled down family by family until they got to ochon. The nafal girdle ochon, so sure enough it comes on ochon. Amalei Achan. So now Achan says, tries to tough it out, to brazen it out. Yeshua, the girdle at the ball, you're coming against me with a girdle? You're saying a girdle is going to establish that I'm guilty? Listen, after Elazar HaKohen, Shnei Gzeir La'adur Atem, you and Elazar HaKohen are the two great leaders of the generation. And if I make a girdle between the two of you, necessarily it's going to come on one of you. So one of those are girdles. Why? It's a girdle is a random thing. It's got to land on somebody. It happened to land on me. What do you want from me? In other words, Marshall teaches out. Look, you know, obviously it wasn't a girdle between only the two of them, but the same way as we were to make a girdle between the two of you, it has to land on one, even though both of you are innocent. The same way, fine, you have a girdle between 600,000 Jews. Doesn't change the fact, or between however many 70-some thousand people from Shevet Yehuda. Fine, it still doesn't change the fact that the whole thing, that the whole thing is random. So now, Omalei, so Yeshua has to tell him, Bevakosha Mimcha, I'm begging you, Al Totzi Laz ala Gerolis. Do not be Motzi Laz, don't call into question the Gerolis. Shasida, Eretz Yisrael, Tshasecholik v'Gerol, because Eretz Yisrael in the future is going to be divided by a Gerol. Shanema Ach v'Gerol, Yecholik Asarens. As the Pasuk says, Eretz Yisrael is to be divided by Gerol. So if you're Motzi Laz on it, what's going to happen then later on when we make the Gerolis to divide up Eretz Yisrael? Everybody's going to be fighting and quarreling and saying it wasn't fair, and then it's going to cause tremendous, sinas chinam between people. Tosfos points out, okay, there is a difference. There you have the Urim Batumim involved. Here you then directly ask the Urim Batumim because Hashem said, I'm not going to be a Dilakter. So fine, it's not exactly the same thing, but still, once the Urim Batumim tell them, as we learned in Bava Basra, which Shevet gets which general territory, then everything else below that was done by Girdle, and therefore Yeshua is saying, if you call into question the Girdle, then it's going to cause problems later on when we divide up Eretz Yisrael. So therefore he tells him, please, ten toida, so please confess to Hashem and don't call the girdle into question. Now, he's saying ten toida, which means give toida, give a confession. So what's that expression? The usual word would be hoider, svado, whatever the Lashon would be. What Yeshua actually did at that point, he sort of bribed and tricked Ochan with words. He made it sound to Ochan like all he needs is a confession. Omalei tells him, am I asking anything from you other than a confession? Ken lay toida, so you'll give the confession, you'll give the admission, and then you'll be potter. So he made it sound, so now how can he do that? That's a blatant lie, because I should have told him whoever did that is going to be given skila. So one answer is, Poshet, you know, he had no choice. He has to get Ochan to confess. So therefore, kind of in Pnei Dakeh Shalom, he really didn't have a choice. Before I should point out another possibility, he's not really lying after all. The fact is, he is going to be potter in Olam Haba. He just makes it sound as though he's going to be potter in Olam Hazeh as well. So fine, you know, Ochan didn't pick up on that detail, but it's not actually a lie. Okay. So Miyad, so right away, Ochan, and Marsha points out another detail as well, actually, after all, he wants to keep the money. So if he confesses, then he knows it's going to be taken away from him. So therefore, so Marsha says, when he says ten toida, does he mean not only you're not going to get in trouble, not only you'll be potter, as in it can mean you'll be potter from Misa. It may even be you'll be potter from having to return the spoils that you took. And Ochan took the bait and went ahead and gave his public, and then gave his public confession. So miyad vayan Ochan es Yeshua. So right away Ochan answered Yeshua vayomer, and he says omno anochi chatosi l'Hashem alakei Yisrael. Indeed, I sinned against Hashem, the God of Israel. V'chazois v'chazois asisi, and I did such and such. Now, what's this v'chazois v'chazois asisi? What's that expression mean? Omer Abasi, Omer Abchanina, Melamed Shemal Ochan b'shloish acharamim. I mean, this wasn't Ochan's first time. He had previously taken wrongly from other charamim, shnayim b'mei Moshe, v'echad b'mei Yeshua. Two that were in Moshe's times, and one now in Yeshua's times. Shenema v'chazois asisi. So in other words, chazois means like this, a previous time, and the vav means another time. Now, what were those previous times? Rashi points out that in Parshas Chukas, next week's parasha, we have when they're fighting against Melech Arod, which was really Rashi tells us based on the Gemara was Amalek in disguise. So they said, if you help me defeat them, v'achramti asareihem, then I will declare their cities and the property in them cherem. Like with Yericho, and they did, and they won the battle. So now Ochan took from those spoils. So Rashi explains they must have done this other times, but it doesn't actually say in the pasuk. But so different other times Ochan had taken from those spoils. There are different other midrashim about that. There's another midrash that says that it was actually there was three or even four in the times of Moshe, and then one in the time of Yeshua, and a couple of Rabbi Hananel and some other Rishonim identify them more closely. There was the war with Arad over here, the war with Melech Arad. There was also the wars with Sichon and with Og. And you have other wars that took place during that period. So you have the war with Midian. So altogether, you have enough wars over there to be able to have that there were several times when spoils were not to be taken by the general public, and Achan went and did anyway. So that's why he says v'chazois asisi. So that's the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yochanan, Omer, Meshum Rabbi Allah, Omer, Meshum Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Shimon, Chamisha, Arba b'mei Moshe, v'echa b'mei Yeshua. So it was four in Moshe's time. Shinama, Anochi Chatasi, v'chazois asisi. So we take each chazois to mean one, and the vav to mean another one. So then altogether it comes out four that were in Moshe's times, and then plus there's the one over here now by Yerichai. So we'll deal with tomorrow, Best Hashem, we'll deal with, so in that case, why is this the first time that caused any consequences? Why, if he took from Melchemes Arad and from the other one, why didn't the rest of the Jewish people get in trouble over there? We'll talk about that tomorrow, Best Hashem. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Tes Sivan, Erev Shchodesh. The Rebbe talks about Nesicha. The one thing that's missing at this point is that a Yid should open his eyes properly and see how everything is ready for Gu'ola. We already have the table set. We have the Levyosin, we have the Shor Abur, we have the wine that's been preserved. The Jewish people are even already sitting around the table. Which table? Shulchan Avim, the table of their father, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Melech Malchah Melech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're already sitting together with Mashiach Tzidkenu, as it says in Sfarim, that in every generation, there's somebody from the descendants of Yehuda who's royally as Mashiach. And in our generation, that ever finishes off, that is Nesi Deirenu. So we already have it all ready, and we just have to see it. We actually have to perceive it. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis, we were talking about the minimum size of a talis, that's chayiv in tzitzis. So first the Alter Rebbe had given the definition, if it's big enough that a 9-year-old boy is able to cover with it his head and most of the length of his body and most of the way around his body. And then it's also big enough that even a 13-year-old boy might wear it occasionally even though it's kind of small on him. Now, the Alter Rebbe continues, Yesh Oimrim, that if it's not big enough for a child who's 9 to cover Rosh HaVerubah, if it is enough for Rosh HaVerubah of the 9-year-old, even if it's too small for a 13-year-old to ever wear it, then according to that second opinion, it would also be called Ksus and is Chayiv in Tzitzis. The Halacha is like the first Svara, and therefore you have to be careful to not make the talis cotton less than that shear of the first one. If you're going to wear one that's smaller, put on it tzitzis because of the second svara, but don't make a bracha on it. What is that amount? So here, the Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch doesn't define that amount. In the Siddur, the Alter Rebbe defines that each wing of it, aside from the neck hole, the front and back squares of a talis cotton, each have to be a full amma by amma in size. If it's creased, then that doesn't count towards the shear, so you have to make sure that it's flat, which is why people wear a bendle to help keep it in place. And then the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that if it's a child's talis cotton, then it can be a little smaller. But this is where we get the talis ketanim that we buy in the stores. You get the size 24 or 26 or whatever, or full amma by amma in size from the neck hole down to the bottom edge, and the same thing in the back, and from side to side, because that's the size the Alter Rebbe is saying. That fits this definition of that's big enough for this 9-year-old to wear and it covers Rosh HaVerubah, etc.